Welcome to the Dirt on Turf podcast. Today's guest is Darren Waters. My inspiration to get into turf, and not only that, my best friend. We talk every day, communicate every day, bounce turf ideas off of him, even though he's not in the business anymore. Follow along in this two-part episode. You're going to find out where his career, how his career started, and what he's doing now, and more about our relationship, and you can kind of tell how we bond. So hope you enjoy it. This has been a long time coming, and I appreciate all the support and all the listeners and all the patience in the last couple of months. It's been a job transition, so it's been a little difficult. So thank you, everybody, for your patience. Before we get started, I'd like to thank our sponsors: Netting Professionals, Sod Solutions, Agstone, Benchmark Tool and Supply, and Turf Mend. Right now you're going to hear some of those. Please give them a listen, give them a follow. We want to thank them for their support. Without them, this would not be possible. And we appreciate the continued support and patience. But let's give a listen to some of these sponsors.
Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specialize in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom nettings for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, scoreboards, overhead netting, barrier netting, sideline netting, golf course netting, and much more. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals continues to provide quality products and services to many recreational, high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, courses, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects.
For almost 30 years, Sod Solutions has worked with top researchers and universities to develop and release cutting-edge turf grass varieties. We have positioned these grasses as the most sold patented varieties in the world, varieties that benefit the golf, sports, residential, and commercial industries. With that success, we have launched a new segment called Sod Solutions Professionals. Sod Solutions Pro is focused on assisting clients through the entire process to provide a beautiful, streamlined, and successful grassing project. We offer robust professional services featuring specification writing, turf grass selection consulting, product sourcing, delivery and installation, and maintenance solutions. Visit sodsolutionspro.com and let us work for you.
Welcome to the Dirt on Turf podcast. I'm your host, Chris Toppings. Today we have Darren Waters, my cousin. I call him my uncle, but he is my inspiration for being in turf. And so I've had a bunch of people ask what my inspiration was since I ask everybody. So today I have Darren here. Darren, it's not like I hadn't talked to you like 5 minutes ago, every 5 minutes during the day anyway, but welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm glad to be here.
So for people that don't know, Darren lives in Atlanta now. He grew up here in East North Carolina. Darren, kind of get everybody started. Explain how you got in. He's not in turf anymore, but he was for a long time. So I want you to explain how you got into turf. What made you want, kind of give a background of you?
Well, I guess, you know, I've never really started with aspirations of, you know, being in the turf field. I grew up on a tobacco farm in Eastern North Carolina. And that's really what I thought I would be doing, you know, the rest of my life, just, you know, carrying on the farm and stuff. But, you know, we kind of saw the writing on the wall that tobacco, you know, was not going to be, you know, for us, tobacco was our cash crop. So you couldn't make it just grow. We were so not, you know, a mega farm. So we really couldn't make it on, you know, just growing corn, wheat and stuff like that, beans. So what happened actually was I decided to go off to college and really wasn't planning on doing that at all. And my, actually my ag teacher, talked to me, Robert A. Smith, great man. And, he talked to me and my best friend and said, you know, you boys really need to consider going to college. And so he actually got us into the 2-year program at NC State. And, cause it was kind of a last minute thing for us. And so the first year I was in field crops because I was planning on going back to working on the farm. And my dad actually got a chance. You know, they were talking to him. My dad was he's an avid golfer. And he got a chance to possibly be – they wanted him to come down and work at the – actually the country club that, you know, about 2 miles from where he used to live. Wanted him to come down there and be a mechanic and – they wanted him to actually run the course. And so he was going to need somebody to, he knew nothing about, you know, grass or greens and stuff like that. So I actually, after my first semester, I switched over to the turf program at NC State. And from there, that whole situation kind of fell by the wayside. They went another way. Well, I was already into the turf program. And like I say, we kind of saw, you know, it seemed the writing on the wall that tobacco would be being phased out in our area eventually. And that's eventually what, you know, happened. But so I graduated NC State just like, you know, every other graduate and needed a job. So I started with, you know, looking at golf courses, and I got a hold of a superintendent's, a book of all superintendents in North Carolina. And I sent an application to every golf course in North Carolina and sent a resume to them. And basically, you know, I got one at the time, I got one golf course to respond, and I actually got a job offer from that one course. But in the meantime, I had seen that they had a opportunity for a sports turf person. They needed a sports turf manager for Duke University. And so I applied for that job and ended up interviewing and took that job at the time and really didn't know what I was getting into it to start with, but that's kind of how my journey into turf started.
Yeah, that was your first job out of school too, was it not?
Yep, the only job I ever had was working sun up to sun down on a farm before I had taken that job. And I had no experience whatsoever working in turf. I'd never worked anything but on a tobacco farm. And it was one of those things where, you know,
that's when Spurrier was coming in to coach there, and he saw the conditions of the field. He said, y'all gonna hire somebody here. Is that right? That is correct.
It was Steve Spurrier had been an assistant coach there. And he knew how bad the football fields were at the time when he was there. And he had actually gone on, you know, had moved on. And he was the coach of the Tampa Bay Bandits when they had the other, USFL league. And it had actually folded. And so he was looking at a job. Well, Duke ended up, you know, offering him a job to come back, and one of his stipulations was he wanted to see major upgrades in the sports turf fields, in the football field, mainly the stadium and his practice fields. So that was the whole reason that this job was being filled. They actually, when I went there, they had a tree man who was in charge of all the trees on the campus. He was taking care of the sports fields, kind of like he's splitting his time between that and the sports fields. So that's kind of, you know, how the job came about.
When you got there, what kind of equipment did you have when you first, your first day on the job?
Well, when I got there, really, that was one of the major problems for Duke University is the fields and stuff, because there was no equipment whatsoever that pertained to sports fields. Everything was grounds maintenance. The sprayer that they were using was a 3-point hookup sprayer that was, you know, like, I don't know, it was like 10 feet wide, a 50-gallon, you know, agricultural sprayer. They had no aerification machine. They had a 5-gain pool type reel mower. Was the only mower they had for all the fields, and that was including soccer, baseball, everything. So the equipment was probably 50% of the problem at the time when I first took the job. And, you know, I really didn't know any of this stuff when I actually got there until I saw it and kind of saw what I was into. And because I didn't, you know, I'm just young buck, you know, coming straight out of school, you know, don't have any experience in. So it's going to be, you know, on the job learning for me. And so it was quite a tall task to start with. And on top of that, when I took the job was actually also the time when we were having the Olympic Festival, and the Olympic Festival and closing ceremonies for the Olympic Festival was going to be held at Duke's Wallace Wade Stadium. So we had I was working, you know, 10, 12 hour days right through the first, it was like a month until the Olympic Festival came. So I didn't even know what way I was going half the time. I was working so hard and stuff, but so I really didn't have time. I wasn't even focusing on the sports fields part. When I first got there, I was focusing on getting ready for the Olympic Festival for, you know, the next year, which, you know, we had the Olympics and stuff. And so, but I mean, it was really crazy when I first started there. So it took me a while to kind of get settled in.
And you had, you did, they did allow you after you got there to buy some equipment, did it not?
Well,
I knew you said
this is kind of the tricky part. This is the part I didn't know. As I had been there, we got through the Olympic Festival. And as soon as the Olympic Festival was over, I was brought into the, I was called, myself and my boss and his boss were actually called up to the president's office of the university. And we were basically brought in and we were sat down and told, and with the assistant athletic director, that the Duke University, that the athletic department had given, because I worked for, the way it was set up when I was there, you worked for the grounds department, and the grounds department supported the athletic department. So I didn't directly work for, I was not an employee of the athletic department. So I was an employee of the grounds department. Well, we were brought in there and said and told that we had 1 year to turn those, basically the sports fields, turn them around, that they had received permission from the president of the president of Duke University, that they could actually contract out the sports fields if they did not see improvement within the first year. So I was basically brought in and told, you know, either you get it done right, or you're going to be probably looking at a job after your first year. So, you know, it was either, you know, take care of it, or probably going to be hitting the road.
Right. That's pretty serious as a young kid right out of school.
20 years old,
that's pretty intimidating.
It was, you know, I mean, considering everything was, you know, so new to me, it was quite, you know, quite a shock. But, you know, like I say, I grew up on a tobacco farm. And so I knew, you know, one thing I knew was hard work. And from between my hard work and what I had learned at NC State through the turf program, which was really new when I first started. You know, I mean, I graduated in 87, and, you know, the turf program was just getting going. I mean, I remember, you know, going and to the turf program, and there was like when we went in, you know, and had when we would have outside, you know, people come in and talk to us, you know, there was like five of us sitting in the room that was in, you know, in the turf program. And I went back years later as a speaker to that, and I went into the room, and there was, you know, 40 guys in there, you know, how the turf program had grown so much in like 5 years. But I was in the very, you know, initial stage of the 2-year program. But I relied on everything that I had learned in that program. But the one good thing about, I mean, probably the biggest thing about having that 1 year to turn the program around, I was given a kind of a blank slate and said, okay, they said, what do we need? My facilities said, what do we need to make this happen? What equipment do you need? So I was able to go out and purchase, you know, mower, you know, bought a brand new Toro riding mower. I bought a Hong sprayer. I bought, you know, all the equipment I needed, the top of the line aerifier. I mean, everything that I knew that I had to have, I went out and was able to, you know, get a check for that and purchase. That really made, you know, one probably the biggest difference of anything was just having the equipment to do the general maintenance of everything that had been neglected for years. And, you know, I mean, we're talking, you know, this is the 80s. So, you know, Duke University, that back then we had no sand-based fields or anything like that. It was virgin soil that had been there for years. No fields were redone. You know, if something needed, you know, I would cut sprigs and, you know, plant my own stuff. Back then, Duke University didn't have the money to redo stuff like that. So it's amazing watching it now and seeing stuff, and, you know, the difference is, you know, how today is, you know, you can have a concert on the field, you know, come in and rip it up, and, you know, replace it. Or, you know, back then, you know, we were all patch and repair type things that we did.
Yeah, well, so I take it that first year you didn't get fired since you didn't work there for, what, 10, 12 years? How many years did you work there?
I worked there 12 years, yes. It was a success. I mean, all it took was just a little hard work and, you know, proper maintenance, you know, and it's one thing saying, you know, when you come into a situation, you take something that's on, you know, the ground level, it's, you know, it's real easy, you know, to make it look a lot better.
I agree with that.
Come in somewhere that's, you know, that's already at a high success and, you know, you're trying to top it from that. So, I mean, I came into a good situation where, you know, it was rock bottom. And so if they did nothing but hard work, you know, would have increased it. But with the equipment and the hard work, it everything turned out very well. Coach Spurrier to tell the truth, he was the deciding factor. I mean, it was what he said at the end of the year. And he gave me, you know, flying colors, thank God. And we went on to become, you know, he was he was, out of all the coaches that I had went through at Duke University, he was my favorite coach. I mean, and not because, you know, he kept me my job, but he was just, he was the kind of guy that, you know, you didn't shoot him no crap. You know, he wanted everything straight up. If something wasn't going to be good, he wanted you to tell him it wasn't going to be good, you know, that day. You know, if you had to push him off the field today, you know, and there was no alternative, you know, he would understand that. He was straight up. As long as you shot him straight up, you know, everything would be fine. And to this day, you know, I saw him, I don't know, probably 10, 15 years later. He came back. I was actually at Duke for something, and I heard somebody yell my name across the crowd, and I looked over, and it was him yelling at me and stuff. So he was a great mentor for me, I guess you could say.
That's cool. It's just those kind of stories are cool to hear, which I've heard these stories before, which is why I'm in turf. But it's good for the listeners to hear. I do have one question. You had you've explained to me a couple times, like, sod, you couldn't do that, and so you had a little nursery that you kind of created. Kind of elaborate on that, like how you came to say, well, I need this nursery and I need to figure out what I need to do here.
Well, the problem was we had Wallace Wade Stadium, you know, it hadn't been renovated or changed since, oh God, I don't even remember how long it was. My boss, when I first came there, he told me that they had that back in the, I think it was the 50s or something, 50s or 60s, that he knew that, the research that he knew of before he got there, that they had had a problem and that the turf had to be, was killed out, actually, he said, by accident. And they had put a hybrid of grass. And it was, you know, back then, you know, they didn't have all the different hybrids and stuff, but it was something like a 57 hybrid or something. I can't remember the exact, you know, number or name of it. I think it was 57, but it was so close to a common Bermuda that, you know, you couldn't go and you know, like replace, you know, just replace it with, you know, like if you had a bad spot in the field, you just couldn't go out and replace it with 419 or something, you know, because that 419 would stick out like, you know, a sore thumb. Mm-hmm. So
after a lot more dense and tighter leaf blade. It's a lot more dense.
It would, like I say, you could put it down on the field and it was fine. But when you walk to the top of the stadium and look down, I mean, you could pick it out like, you know, you would went out there and marked it out with a marker. I mean, it was crazy just because of the density you're talking about. So I basically, what I did is I cut sprigs from that field and started me a little nursery on the side of the practice fields we had two practice fields. Well, the side, we had a big area on the side of one practice field. It was on the other side of drains and stuff. And so I started me a nursery over there. So when I had a problem, you know, if I had an irrigation hit or something, you know, I had to dig up or something and, you know, I had to repair something, that's what I did. I mean, all the years that I was there, I mean, we would have, you know, years where it was, you know, in between, just like, you know, any other fields, because that turf was not like, you know, 419 or Tiffway 2 or stuff at the time, you know, that where it would hold up. I mean, it would get wore out. And so I would have to cut my own sprigs on the sides outside of the two hash marks, and I would re-sprig the center of the field and grow it in before next year. Luckily, I didn't have a lot of summer activities on my field. So that was one thing I was lucky with. At Wallace Wade Stadium, we really didn't have a whole lot of activities there. So I was able to, you know, it had no pressure in the summer.
You're able to really push it hard for football season.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I pushed it as hard as you could push grass back then. So But yeah, that was one of the things, that was one of the challenges we had, you know, with that type of grass, because, you know, they just, I mean, finally, the last 2 years, 3 years before I left, we finally renovated Wallace Wade Stadium. And that was the first field we actually renovated and went with a sand-based field and stuff. We alleviated that problem at least. But because
the renovation?
You've had him on your show. Mr. Nolan did the renovation.
Nolan Thomas, that's all.
So, I'll never forget the year. I can't remember the exact year of it, but the theme, I still remember this. The theme of Duke's football season was thunder and lightning. Well, we had the first game of the season. First game of the season, field was immaculate, you know, just beautiful. Florida State came in. We started out with Florida State. Well, about an hour before the game, it started thundering and lightning. And it proceeded to rain 2.5 inches from about 30 minutes before kickoff to the end of the game. And, I mean, it was so bad that they had to stop, delay the game. I still remember both teams had to go up in the tunnel, one on one side and one on the other, standing there looking at each other because they had to take them out of the thunder and lightning and stuff. And so they had to go up into the tunnel and stand there and look at each other. And it just poured, I mean, cats and dogs. And when those big old Florida State boys came out there, I'll never forget it, because I was standing on the sideline looking, and they went down, and they would go down in their defensive lineman would go down in their 4-point stance, and their fingers would go down 2 knuckles. I mean, that's just how wet it was, because this was not a sand-based field. It was, you know, it was virgin soil. And when we got through with that game, it was completely trashed. I mean, completely trashed. And, you know, you don't recover from that. And I even got interviewed by the local paper after that. That's how bad it was. We made the field safe for the rest of the year, but we just, you know, it never looked aesthetically pleasing the rest of the year. Let me just say that. But you know, that was, you know, you were dealt that, you had to play the hand you were dealt, and that's what we had. So, we lived with it.
Now, was that field overseeded at the time of football?
We did not. When I first got there, it was not overseeded. And we went through a period where we overseeded, and then I overseeded based on our schedule. You know, if we really didn't have any late games, we would not overseed. And then we went on probably, probably about 4 or 5 years there where we did overseed. And then we went a year or two where we didn't, and then we went back on, I think. So, but there was no overseeding done before I got there. And I know that was when, you know, Perennial Rye was just getting kicking in and started. And, you know, when I started, I was one of the first to do that to a soccer field. And that really made, you know, people just, you know, stand up and take notice when, you know, you go to a field and, you know, you could, you know, you got pretty rye grass and you go out there to it, it's all striped up on game day. Ain't nothing that looks better than that. Yeah, so, we did basically football based on our schedule. I did a couple of years back then. There was just when dyes were coming out. I think, you know, 1 year I dyed the field green. I think we played Carolina the last game of the season, and we dyed it, because it was TV and stuff. So we dyed it, painted it, but, you know, did the regular field marking paint over top of it, and it turned out good. Because, you know, it was also, you know, dependent on, you know, how the field was, you know, what was the kind of shape was the field in? Was it completely chewed up? If it was completely chewed up, yeah, we overseeded and stuff. But, you know, if it was in decent shape and we could get away with it, we tried not to do it because, remember, I have to, you know, grow to turn this field back around and grow it in, you know, through the, you know, the through the summer months. So I didn't want anything competing with it if I had to.
That's a tall task there. Now, did you have to do anything like on campus grounds based or anything?
The way Duke University was laid out was I basically took care of it. I had, you know, like it was basically like four roads. It was a square block. And all of Duke's athletic fields were situated within that square block, Cameron, everything. But so I basically took care of it. Everything inside those four roads, except for I had one practice field that was for soccer that was built on a it was a dump that turned into a sport a soccer practice field. But for about 5 years, it was a leaf. It was where we stored our leaf pile. And so basically that field, we pushed those leaves down to the stuff that were where it was turned to complete mulch of soil. And we turned that into a practice field for soccer. And you talking about growing grass, that thing would grow some grass. But it wouldn't handle a whole lot of water, but it would grow grass like nobody's business. But back to the area, I was in charge of everything outside of the buildings. That meant, you know, if, you know, the parking lot Z needed mulch in the beds and the trees trimmed, I had to do that. If the tennis nets needed, you know, they were worn out, needed to be replaced, and the screens, I had to do that. I had to trim the shrubbery around Cameron Indoor Stadium. And basically, if it was outside, the only thing I didn't have to do was the building. I didn't have to touch a building. You know, if something was wrong with the building, that was, you know, the facilities. But
and so much has changed since then.
If it was outside, I was responsible for it. And, you know, from blowing the parking lots to everything. That's why, you know, game days were so hectic for me. You know, it weren't just, you know, I had to have the field done and put away and ready because on game days I had so many other tasks and stuff that I had to take care of to get ready for, you know, the fans and stuff. So, if I didn't have my game field set and ready to go, I couldn't get through it.
How about the fans that camp out for the tickets for basketball? You had to deal with that.
That's
a nightmare, wasn't it?
You're referring to the Krzyzewski deal. Yes, I only had a crew of about three permanent guys, and every Monday morning from those that my guys would spend at least those three guys every Monday morning, they would spend till probably after lunch just cleaning trash from Krzyzewskiville and that was a weekly routine. I mean, we had to go out every Monday morning because, you know, usually you always had a game on the weekend and, you know, everything was trashed and stuff. And we would have basically, you know, during the week, we had trash cans set all out for them because, you know, we had 120 tents and, you know, somebody had to be in the tent at all times and it was up to 10 people per tent. So, I mean, it could get pretty crazy and out there. And, you know, some of the stuff we've seen and done that saw done was pretty outrageous. But I know nowadays I understand, you know, it's a lot better and stuff, and they have, you know, have it set up a little nicer for them, but they were just, you know, they just hang out, they just took up the sidewalks and the lawns then, you know, it was just, it was kind of like organized chaos. And, but it was quite a maintenance headache. I can say that, but, you know, luckily it was in the winter months. So, that's the only saving grace.
Yeah. So you stayed there from what, 88 to 2000, 87 to 99, something?
Yep. It was, July. Because we moved to Florida in July of 99.
July of 99.
Yeah. And from there.
You moved to Florida for why?
Well, actually moved to Florida because my wife got an opportunity in her line of work that was basically going to, her salary was going to make my salary and her salary. So she got an unbelievable opportunity. And so that's really why we moved. And I always thought once I was at Duke that I would never move, but it was also at the time we had management change, and we had I don't know if I should even say it, but a retired colonel from the Marines, and he was in charge of our operation. And
everybody can appreciate where that's going.
and you know,
there's one in every crowd. Things just
weren't quite the same.
There's one in every crowd.
Right. Things just weren't quite the same. And, you know, I never even considered that I would ever go, because I loved working there at Duke. I mean, I loved my job. I'd always been a sports person, you know, you and me know that till this day, you know, all the sporting events we go to and stuff, I'm a, you know, outside guy. And, you know, I just, you know, loved anything to do with sports. And so that's kind of what drew me to the field. And that's the part of the job that I love. And, you know, dealing with all the different sports, you know, I mean, when I first started at Duke, we didn't, you know, all we played was, we had football, baseball, and soccer. And while I was there, we added women's soccer, and we added
lacrosse.
Women's lacrosse. We had men's lacrosse too, but we added, you know, two new sports, you know, during my tenure there and stuff. So I mean, I enjoyed being a part of all the different sports and stuff, and you know. And, you know, tennis and everything. I mean, you know, because when you've got to oversee everything, you're into all of it. So that was part of my job that I enjoyed. And so I never in a million years thought I would ever go anywhere. Because I had, you know, I mean, at the time when I worked there, after I'd worked at Duke University for, I guess it was first 4 years, 4 or 5 years, I had an offer to go over to NC State, take over their stadium. And I got an offer at UNC. They tried to get me to go over there and work in the stadium and stuff. But, you know, I enjoyed what I was doing at Duke. And, you know, I was appreciated. You know, that means a lot, too, for the job that I'd done. So,
yeah, sometimes the grass isn't always greener.
Yeah. And, but, you know, I was very happy and comfortable. And so it was really kind of a shock to me when I said, you know, because my wife was, she didn't even, at first she was like, you know, she weren't even going to check into it. You know, she was like, yeah, you know, I know we don't want to go there. We don't want to move. And I was like, you know, well, just see what they say. And one thing led to another. And turns out we were headed to Florida. And so that's where we,
you know, and when you went to Florida, you know what, we're going to wrap this part up as part one, because we got more to talk about, but we're going to come back for part two on next episode. Well, thank you, listeners. That's it for today. Be sure to stay tuned to hear from the rest of our sponsors. Please give them a follow and go check them out if you're in need of products or services. And stay tuned for next week or later this week, part two of this podcast. Thank you.
AgStone is focused on providing its customers with more than just a great product, offering a surprisingly affordable full-course wetting agent that is 98% biodegradable, reduces LDS, increases nitrogen uptake, and has no burn potential. One chemistry, multiple benefits. AgStone stays with you every step of the way, helping analyze and maximize potential through our products, technical knowledge, and customer support. To get more information, visit www.ag-stone.com, www.ag-stone.com, or email sales@agstone.com and ag-stone.com. Benchmark Tool and Supply was founded over 15 years ago and have established themselves as experts in the GPS construction industry ever since. They're excited to bring their expertise into the sports turf management and landscaping world. Their recent partnership with ABI has allowed them to bring that knowledge into an industry that has seen the rapid adoption of GPS and automation technology. The ABI Force Z23 is an all-in-one field groomer and landscaper's dream tool. The ability to bring laser precision to ball field grading is changing the way the game is played at every level. When it comes time to step up your turf maintenance and line marking, turn to the GPS pros who have years of experience helping experts get the job done right the first time. Call Benchmark Tool and Supply today at 866-342-7665. This segment is brought to you by TurfMend. TurfMend is a patch repair product developed by a former golf course superintendent, designed for professional turf managers and homeowners alike to fill in those bare spots or worn areas of turf. TurfMend helps you save time and money by using high-quality professional ingredients so you will never end up with weed seed in your repairs. TurfMend is now available in two different formulations. One, with USGA specs saying peat moss and grass seed, or the second formulation, which has OMRI listed compost, peat moss, and grass seed. TurfMend is proudly sourced and blended in the USA. Repair the bear with TurfMend and go to www.turfmend.com for more information. That's www.turfmend.com. And make sure to reference Dirt on Turf when you place your order to get 10% off. Repair the bear with TurfMend. Well, that's it for today's episode. Again, I'm your host, Chris Toppings, with the Dirt on Turf podcast. And before we leave you, let me remind you about netting professionals. It doesn't matter what kind of netting you need, whether it's for a batting cage, a dugout, driving range, backstops, check out Netting Professionals. Go to their website, www.nettingpros.com, or follow them on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn. You don't want to miss out with these people. Give them a call. Let them give you a price. They'll take care of you. Until next week. I'm Chris Toppings. We'll see you then. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Dirt Turf Podcast. We'll be right back.